quack, 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 quack,
The Mighty Ducks, the podcast where we discuss the 1996 Disney hockey sequel, D3, The Mighty Ducks, 5 minutes at a time. I'm your host, Blake, and I have two very special guests on the line today for this week's show. First of all, returning from last season, from 5 Minute Arrival and Cock and Bull Movie Talk, Robert E. G. Black. Robert, Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Did I miss anything?
Currently, I also have Annihilation Minute.
Okay, there you go. I knew I missed one. I knew
and the room minute, actually. I got four right now.
I knew I was going to miss something in there. And a newcomer to this show, someone you've probably heard a lot of MMX shows over the years, Father David Nari.
Welcome to the show. Hi, Blake. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you decided to come on the show.
Well, I couldn't miss Hans's funeral. You know, he just meant so much to me and really taught me how to fly. So I just had to make sure I put on my best clerical suit and make sure that I paid my respects.
Well, I thank you for that. I was going to make a note. My wife was looking at the sheet for guests. And he's like, you have a priest coming on the show? That's pretty normal in our world. That's pretty normal for us.
You just never know where I'm going to turn up.
Yeah, I cracked my wife up and showed my sheet. I was like, what? Anyway, before we get into the minutes that we have here, let's talk about everyone's experience. Robert, last year, you were on the show and you said D2, you never saw it before.
Right.
D3 was the same thing for you this time around.
Yes, I didn't see it until 2 days ago.
So what are your thoughts on it now that you've seen it as an adult?
It's very cartoonish, a lot of it, but this segment doesn't really have any of that.
Yes, it's true. It really does not. It's actually more serious for the serious movie, which the way this movie's been, it's nice to have a little bit of levity. I'm not going to lie. It's nice. David, what's your history with this and the franchise, actually, for the Mighty Ducks?
The Mighty Ducks were part of the background of my childhood. I was a 90s kid, so the Mighty Ducks was always around in the culture. You had kids in the school coming in their Mighty Ducks t-shirts. The movies were on constant repeat on the Disney Channel. And it was never something that I was interested in because I didn't care about hockey. I got that. Oh yeah, ragtag bunch of kids. They have a coach. Something. Everybody wins at the end. And it was enough for me to know that it existed, and to gain as much from cultural osmosis as I did. So, like Robert, this was not a movie I had seen until 2 days ago. And coming to it, I was really interested to see the movie grapple with the growth of the characters in terms of age, that now we no longer have the little league hockey team. Now we have to grapple with, oh yeah, high school and stuff. So what happens when we have this ragtag group of people go to a school that is way beyond their means? And the cartooniness there was more of the ridiculous high school bully variety than the frantic slapstick that I know is much more a part of the other movies. Though there's a lot of that too in D3.
Yeah, keeping in mind this movie really had like a massive prank war in all of this movie. So, which would be a lot of fun covering earlier in this run because of how ridiculous those pranks got. A little bit ridiculous. we are now at the serious point of the movie. When we last left you, Hans, we found out, has passed away, to everyone's distraughtness. I remember watching this for the first time. I was like, no, this can't happen. This can't happen. I was a kid in the theater seeing this. And I was kind of like, what? This can't happen. But it did. And actually, funny part is, as a kid, I always forgot that Hans and Jan were different people. Yeah. From the second movie, I completely forgot they were different people for the longest time when I was younger. So when I got older, I realized they were separate people. Like, oh, okay, never mind. But we're at the funeral. We're here for Hans' funeral. And it was, I'm just going to be honest with you, nowadays, I used to go to Catholic school. I'm not a Catholic parishioner anymore. I go to a Christian church here in town. I go to the Ridge for those in Milwaukee. And love my church. Matter of fact, I volunteer there every once a month. Love my church. So doing a Catholic kind of thing like this, this is weird to me again, watching this back. Because I haven't had a funeral like this since my grandfather passed away. Like, that's a long time. So I've been at funerals lately. This is the first time I've really seen a funeral like this. So, David, how often is this kind of thing like this? Like the crowd outside, the prayers outside like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have many notes about this scene, as you can well imagine. So in typical Catholic practice, the funeral ritual has three parts. There's the vigil, also known as the wake, the gathering of family and friends, usually at the funeral home, around the body, where there is the sharing of stories, a time to comfort the grieving. Usually you have great big photo boards of all the memories and a way to celebrate the life that the person lived and to give thanks to God for that life. Then there's the funeral mass, which is a solemn celebration of what God has done for the deceased, with reminders of the gift of baptism. In the Catholic tradition, a celebration of the Lord's Supper as a way of being reminded of how Christ gave his life for us so that we might rise to newness of life, and that therefore holds out hope for this deceased person. And then at the graveyard or the cemetery would be the committal service, where there is a ritual chance to say goodbye to the deceased, to commend the body to the earth, whether that's going to be a burial like Hans is getting here, I presume, or it's going to be cremation later on. There is a chance for the family and friends to gather out in the cemetery. So every time that I do a funeral, there is a committal service that is seen as part of the ritual. Now, all that said, this is not a Catholic burial. No, it looks like it at first blush, because you have the very nebbish looking minister with the stole and which is the green sash he's got wearing, and then the white robe, which is called an alb. And you can see his little clerical collar poking out from underneath to make sure. Yes, look, it's a minister. You can tell because he's wearing the thing. In the setup for this scene, however, it's all wrong. It's all wrong. First of all, green is not a color of burial in the liturgical Christian traditions. Normally that would be white. White is the color we associate with Easter and the sign of the resurrection of Jesus. In some traditions, you might have purple as a sign of penance and a sign of praying for the deceased person before whatever unfinished business they may have had, that any sins that still need to be forgiven on their souls. Green is the color of, well, ordinary time, at least in the Catholic liturgical tradition, that is for most of the church year when we are reading stories about the ministry of Jesus, we would wear green. So it's not a funeral color in the Catholic tradition. Secondly, I love hearing the entire Our Father in this movie. It is kind of refreshing, honestly, to have an actual expression of religious faith coming from a Disney movie, of all things, and to have a chance to hear the prayer in full. And in hearing that prayer, you can also pick up that, oh, wait, this is a Protestant service, because the Our Father includes the doxology at the end. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. And that doesn't really surprise me. Hans is Norwegian, so it is more than likely that he is Lutheran in his faith tradition. Only 3% of Norwegian Christians are Roman Catholic. The other 68% representation among Lutherans who can have a strong liturgical tradition such as this one.
Wow. There you
go. Where do the three women in the Bavarian dresses fit in?
Oh, we do have several very nice hats, don't we?
Yeah. It's the I think it's called a dirndy, the dress. And there's like three of them standing there. I'm like, are they going to sing? I was waiting. They didn't do anything.
That is really weird. You're right. That is really strange. They're just kind of standing there.
They're the bereavement committee from the local Lutheran church. They're there to represent the community.
Oh my God. That's fantastic. That is great. I feel like I learned a lot in the last like 2 minutes there. That was nice. Mm-hmm.
But the thing that drives me crazy about the scene is just how Gordon just kind of pushes aside the minister. Like, no, wait, no, I have something to say, which, you know, boo on that minister for having a poor control of the ritual, because if this is following typical patterns, the Our Father is one of the last things you do before the minister is going to wrap everything up. So the minute he's so close to being done, he's got the book. He just needs to be a little quicker on that draw.
But if a hockey player approaches you, you get out of the way.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's the hockey funeral. So, but I do like the sentiment, though, of Gordon bringing Hans's jersey. I do like that sentiment. Just like, I don't think we've ever actually saw Hans's jersey. Like, I think it's the first time we actually saw it. We didn't see it in the first movie. He never wore it. So I think that's the first time we've really seen it, which is nice to know he had one. Mm-hmm. He got him one jersey, which is a big deal because he's the reason they ever got the skate. They ever got their equipment. Like, he's the reason. If it wasn't for him, they would never be on the ice.
So it's been a while since I watched the first one. Is this the matching jersey of what they were before they had the new logo?
Yes, this is the Duckworth jersey. This is the Duckworth logo, the original logo. So, which is that's actually the second time we've seen that logo in this movie, because Charlie wore it at the beginning of the movie to the school. So that I don't think they showed that jersey that much in the second movie. Like they seem more here than in the second movie, which is a nice thing to see. But I do enjoy the fact that he does give this great speech. Every time you touch the ice, remember it was Hans who taught us how to fly. That is a great sentiment.
As a speech instructor, I would say it's a great sentiment, but not a good speech.
Yes.
I don't think anyone can hear him but Julie.
It wasn't very loud.
No.
But the funny part is...
Breath support, Gordon. Breath support. You just use your diaphragm. You're in an outdoor space. The wind is just whisking all your words away.
And they're right by a lake. It's going to be noisy. You got to speak up.
One would think he would know how to speak. He was a lawyer and a hockey coach. One would think he would know how to talk loud. Get your point across. It's short. To the point. Get it out loud. It's not like you're doing a whole, like, you have a whole written speech here. You don't. Two lines. Because I kind of find it impossible now that you're saying that he didn't say that loud, but how did Charlie hear him?
Right.
How could he possibly have heard him? Well,
that's why Charlie's upset. He didn't hear him. He thinks he just showed up and put a shirt on the thing.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
I don't think it would have mattered to Charlie whatever Gordon would have said. Charlie would still just be mad at him because of the abandonment that Charlie feels like has been foisted upon him.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. And what's weird about it is that I'm watching this whole thing and I realize walking away, I'm a huge Dawson Creek fan. So I watch him cry and it's Pacey Winter all over again. I've been saying that all movie. The more the movie continues, the more Joshua Jackson turning into Pacey Winter in this movie. This movie continues. And the crying and the walking away was straight out of Dawson's Creek.
He just keeps right on walking right into the lake. Pushes the geese aside. He just goes right into the sea. I'm going to drown his sorrows.
And are those birds geese? Because could they not get ducks for the shot?
Yeah. Oh, probably.
Or is that the point? He's walking toward geese.
Well, the thing is, they're filming at a real cemetery. So I think they're just going to go what they're going with. They're actually filming at the Lakewood Cemetery in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I think he's going to go with what's there. You know?
These geese are my teammates now. You'll be ducks, right?
Quack for me. Quack. Just to finish up the funeral scene, though, they do put what kind of flowers are they putting on there? Are those flowers or are those like they're putting on top of the actual casket?
We just see a few people. It looks like they have roses.
Those are roses. Yeah.
In my experience, the funeral home will often provide flowers to the families of the deceased so that everyone has something that they can lay on the casket. And I've also seen where that is not provided, people will just take flowers out of the flower arrangements and lay those on top. They're like, oh, won't give me a flower, I'll just take one of these and put it down on there.
Oh my god, that is actually something that my family would do. I'm not gonna lie, my family would do that. So my family would probably pay for the flower arrangements and then take them with them. That's something my parents would do. Hopefully they'll listen to this and yell at me later for that one. So we cut to Charlie's room. And his alarm goes off at 6 a.m. I have a couple issues here. massive issues here. First of all, it's 6 a.m. I leave for work at 6 a.m. every morning. And never, no matter what time of the year it is, and I'm in the Midwest, is it ever this light out? Is it ever this light out? That bothered me immediately. Mm-hmm. It's never this light out at 6 in the morning. Even in the summer. Even in the summer, it's never like this. I watch the sun go up at work most of the time. Like, I know it's never light out at 6 a.m. So that's the first thing that bothered me. And second of all, how did he not notice that Gordon's in his room this entire time? Like, how did he not notice? I don't understand that at all. It always bothered me. It was a kid. Like, how did he never notice he was there?
Deep circadian
rhythms. And
when did
he set the alarm?
Another question. Another great question. When did he have the time to grab the alarm? It's an old-fashioned alarm, so he could accidentally trip it and turn and set it off by accident while he was sleeping.
Gordon went to Walgreens, bought an alarm clock, set it, snuck into Charlie's room, plugged it in, and has been waiting here since about 4 o'clock in the morning. He wanted to make sure that he was in place when the alarm went off.
See, I didn't mind the light because I see an alarm going to 6 a.m. and I thought of Groundhog Day.
Oh, good call.
I'm like, Charlie's about to relive like the last few days so he can get a better attitude. There's even an old guy that dies. You know, it's appropriate.
It all together. It all fits with you. It really does. Mm-hmm. It's all right, you.
Ground Duck Day.
Ground Duck Day. I think you just found my title for this big show. But I want to know the conversation that Gordon had with Charlie's mom, because they were dating in the first movie. They were not dating in the second movie. It's probably the first time they've seen each other in like a year. What is that conversation like?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because throughout the movie, I got a definite vibe of Gordon and Charlie's mom being together, but either their relationship was left on the cutting room floor, as was a lot of things in this movie, it felt like to me,
yeah.
Or they had weird ex energy happening here. So not remembering the first two movies, like, oh, okay, yeah, so I can see the ex dynamic here.
As far as I know from canon, watching these movies back to back to back, like I've been doing for the last couple of years, in the first movie they date, and then they're together at the end of the first movie. She disappears in the second movie, and then we find out that she got remarried.
Oh,
so in the second movie, now we're in the third movie. I don't even know if Gordon and her have seen each other because she wasn't even at the Good Will Games. She wasn't even there. Oh, yeah. Well, like, have they even seen each other since the end? Since like the end of the first movie. Since he left to go to play in the minors at the end of the first movie until like the day they went into the school.
Wow.
But being in this movie, which is only like a couple of weeks before this.
And we never see any sign of Charlie's stepdad in this film.
Exactly.
So Gordon may as well be his dad. I mean,
well, that's why it's even worse that he just left.
Also valid. Yeah, he was the father figure for him for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably another reason why Charlie's so hurt. It wasn't just his coach, it was his father figure that ditched him in his mind. So
And why Charlie turned to Hans, because did they have scenes together like this before?
Charlie and Hans, they met in the first movie, and in story, he started working there.
Oh, okay.
Quote unquote.
Before, I haven't seen the first movie since the 90s, so.
Before the beginning of the second movie, he started working there. It was explained in the beginning of the second movie. He started working there. And then Hans went back to the home country, and he started working with
him. And his brother was there, yeah.
But, like, the whole thing was he didn't get to know Hans between movies.
And okay.
They explained that in, like, the beginning of the second movie. They did explain that. So that is something they actually covered. Loose end they covered.
Wow.
So I spent way too much time watching these movies. I really have. Way too much time.
Can I just say that Charlie's Bedside Table takes me right back to the 90s? First, you have the stack of cassettes outside of their cases. That's good set dressing. It's unfortunate that the cassettes are all obviously blank. There's no label on them whatsoever. They're just all white blank cassette tapes, but it doesn't matter. And then you have the Velcro wallet. I had one of those when I was a kid. Mine was red and black instead of the consistent color scheme of aquamarine and black that Charlie seems to have going in this room. But I remember wearing out the Velcro on that so much, just taking the $5 bill that I kept safe in there, because, oh boy, that was so much money. Oh, man.
Yeah. I actually had a Drew the Devil's one from a big Drew the Devil's fan. So I had a Drew the Devil's Velcro wallet.
Oh, yeah.
I had it in my room at all times. Didn't have much money in it, but I did have it. And the funny part is my son has a wallet like that now because it's my brother-in-law's old wallet. And he has one of those wallets like that. He has more money in it than I probably ever had in it. Because it was like Christmas money. So he has more money in the wallet than I ever had.
That's inflation, man.
Inflation, yeah. And having a very old and having parents in their 70s and a grandma in their 90s. That also helps. Oh, man. So 6 a.m., he gets woken up and Gordon's sitting there. And I'm not going to lie. I can understand Charlie being very, very confused.
First question, how long have you been sitting there?
Yes. And does my mom know you're here?
Second question.
Well, if it wasn't code for that, he probably would have freaked out more. But because it's my day.
I would freak out if any of my grade school coaches just showed up in my room. I don't care what kind of relationship. Like, Coach Lowry, what are you doing here? No. Coach Boucher, why? This is anyone's house. I live here.
Again, none of my coaches knew where I lived. So now I...
That was Charlie's mistake.
He got to know him way too closely.
Oh, wait, I see. Gordon Bombay is a vampire, and Charlie made the mistake of inviting him into the house. And now Gordon can just come and go as he pleases.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. So he wants to spend the day with Charlie, and this is cool. I actually like this idea. He's depressed. Help him out of a little bit of depression. My whole thing is here. He doesn't explain anything. He just says, I want to get you out of the house. That's really what he wants to say. Oh, is that for him?
Yes, the brute force intervention style.
There's no ducks, which I thought was, that one's harsh. That's just harsh. There's no one to his face. Like, you broke up this team, and he starts complaining about the code straight off again. Come on, dude. Relax a little bit.
Yeah, and besides, I seem to recall someone leaving the ducks, not the ducks leaving someone else. I seem to recall, oh, Charlie, that was you. You were the one who walked away from the team. So, you know, if the ducks are broken up, Charlie, I think it's kind of your fault.
I'd say so. Yeah. I'd absolutely agree with you, 100%. So he's still being bratty. I do enjoy the fact that Gordon's like, fine, this is how I feel like I've done this to my son before. Or I'll just pull him out of bed to get him ready for school. But he just flips his bed over. Flips the bed over. How late is Joshua Jackson? He just flips over the bed.
Flips the bed and dumps him right onto his artificial turf carpet.
That is very funny. You're right.
So green. And it looks so like rough. Like the kind of stuff that you get rug burn on if you looked at it cross-eyed.
That is weird. Okay, you're right. That's absolutely weird. I don't think the thing. I've been to Giant Stadium with the turf, and I've never seen it this green. Like, it's really green. All right. So,
well, honestly, even before he hits the carpet, I was worried about him hitting his head on the dresser.
Yeah,
because he had himself all
he's
tucked
right
up,
next to it,
right up on the headboard, and so I was imagining all of those cassettes just scattering on the floor, big old gash on Charlie's head. Coach Mumbai, oh no, what have I done? Oh gosh, oh my playful yet paternal intervention has gone horribly wrong.
Great, now I gotta go to the ER. I gotta take him to the ER now. Damn it, it was my day. There goes my day.
It's okay. On the next loop, he'll be able to get out of bed before he gets pushed out.
I see what you did there.
Well, I think the next loop is he duct tapes his door closed before he goes to bed to keep Gordon out. It would be the third or fourth loop.
Yeah.
When he'd be out before, he would be out before Gordon even shows up.
Gordon sneaks in through the window and he's like behind him.
Hey, Rob, I have to ask a question. Because you're talking about loops and everything. Have you ever seen the Phineas and Ferb series finale?
No.
They did an episode. The last episode of Phineas and Ferb, the longest day of summer, is Candace and Doof stuck in a loop.
Ooh,
they keep going back and forth having to fix their problem. It's an hysterical episode. Absolutely hysterical. Probably right up your alley based on the whole like loop scenario. It's very, very funny. It's the last episode of Phineas and Ferb. Not the movie that just came out, the last episode of the series. It's a fantastic episode.
Phineas and Ferb is one of the best things Disney has done.
I agree. 100%.
In the last decade.
I love that show.
So good.
Love the show so much. So, all right. So we cut to after I do appreciate, by the way, that Charlie is wearing boxers when he falls out of bed. Appreciate that. And because we did not need any more weird, like, if this is earlier in the movie, or it was like Averman, he'd be wearing like boxers with hearts just for the joke. For the joke. That's what the Averman would do. But Charlie, no, that's not how it works. But we cut to an auditorium or a rink, and they're sitting here. Now, I have this kind of, this actually got brought up earlier from Jim Anderson earlier in the run, talking about this scene. They're sitting here, they're having a conversation. They're the only two here. How does Coach Orion not notice they're there? At all.
He is too in love with his daughter.
Yeah, he's busy.
Okay. All right.
He gave up his career for her. He's not gonna look away.
Okay.
Besides, Charlie's flannel acts as a camouflage. It allows him to blend right in to his surroundings. And as we established, Coach Bombay is a vampire, so if he doesn't want to be seen, he's not going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very valid.
I remember owning all of those flannel shirts when I was a kid in the late 90s, early 2000s, where they're about three sizes too big, looking very grungy, all untucked. Watching this movie took me back, like, oh yeah, I remember when that is how you dressed when you were a kid in the 90s. What were we thinking? It's just, it looks so bad.
Yeah, it is really bad. But you know what? It was the 90s, and you got away with it. You can't get away with it now, but you got away with it then.
Mm-hmm. History is over. We can wear flannel.
you know what? We're still in the time where nobody cares what we're wearing anyway. So nobody cares right now. So now we get the backstory of Orion, which I have to admit, I remember watching this movie for the first time. I did not see this coming the first time I saw this movie. I did not expect this whole story, which I was like, okay, this is good. The fact that his daughter was in a car accident and he was injured, and he didn't want to leave her when the team left Minnesota and went to Dallas. This might be one of the sweetest stories I've ever heard. Like, one of the sweetest, like, father-daughter stories ever. I appreciate this a lot. So, I do appreciate this. As a parent, I appreciate this.
Mm-hmm.
So, well done on this story, because it makes everything actually make more sense why he's here.
The sweetest detail in this scene is the fact that Coach Orion's daughter has figure skates on.
She does, yeah.
Yes!
Which is so good. Because it would be one thing just to, you know, have push her out on the ice in the wheelchair, and isn't that cute? But there's a whole relationship that's suggested by that, where Coach Orion not only takes her out skating, he treats her as a skater.
Yeah.
He treats her as someone who is going to be on the ice and is going to be prepared to skate like anybody else would. And that speaks volumes in just that little detail to the relationship the two of them have.
Yeah, it's this little detail like that that shows how good of a parent he is. Like, it's just a little detail. It's a small little thing, but it means the world to her.
Mm-hmm.
It means so much to her. Charlie's now starts to see him in a different light. I like the fact that he's still calling him a washed-up bully who couldn't hack it, despite just hearing this story. Still calling him that.
Yeah, well, you know, teenagers are dumb, so...
this movie proved. A 14-year-old is stupid. Straight up stupid.
I mean, that's just science.
It's true. Trust me, I have a 12-year-old downstairs. I'm well aware how dumb they can be. Mm. By the time people hear this episode, he'll be 13. can't say it. 13. I'm
gonna hard time. Of course, the tough part is, Blake, that you're the one who's going to get dumber in the coming years. You're, because, you know, for him, you're going to be dumber and dumber as the years go by until about 18, 19, and then you're going to start getting smarter again.
Yes, it's really true. Very true. Good point. So we come to the hallway. And
Before we get to the hallway,
go for it.
I don't have a familiarity with the Nutcracker because I grew up not celebrating Christmas and everything, but the music playing, I was looking it up.
Go for it.
And it's Waltz of the Flowers, which structurally is like a couple oboes, then a harp, and then French horns. Like slowly the whole orchestra joins in. It seemed like it fits the theme of the film. Because it's all these parts come together, and by the end of the song, it's everybody.
That's a good point. I like that.
And then we get to the familiar part is it's everybody.
Yeah, I like that actually a lot. I didn't think about it that way. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, the ending of the Waltz of the Flowers is just this big swell and crescendo of sound as the orchestra is just absolutely going ham. Yeah. And that goes to the whole theme of teamwork that is at the heart of this movie, that you start off maybe feeling a bit disconnected, but when everything comes together, there's a whole symphony that results.
Yeah.
Good point.
I like that. That was good.
I like that a lot. Very nice. Very, very nice. All right. It was brought up at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, and there is another thing I had about this scene before we get to the hallway. Does Coach Bombay have a key to the school? Because it's clear that it's like the weekend or something, because the arena is dark, no one's around in the hallway. And sure, Coach Orion has a key to the ice rink at Eden Hall. Makes total sense.
Right.
Coach Bombay is just, you know, an alumnus, an accomplished alum, but... Yeah, you know, he's just some guy, you know.
Well,
how do he and Charlie get into the room? He can do anything. I mean, setting aside, of course, vampire being the answer to all these. I would posit that maybe Coach Orion was in on this.
Ooh, maybe
Coach Orion left a door open for Bombay and Charlie, because Orion actually does want Charlie back.
Mm-hmm.
Orion's playing the long game.
That's why he made him not captain earlier. He's playing with him because he's bringing out his best.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
That's a good call, actually. Now I'm thinking about it, that makes sense, because I can see Bombay pretty much telling Orion, this is my plan. This is what I want to do. And I know you have this system. I don't want to mess with your routine. And that explains why they're not noticing him there, because he knows he's there.
He knows.
That ties it all together. That ties everything together. That's a good call. I mean, yeah, that would actually make a lot more sense why they're not noticing, because he knows they're there. He's not going to break his routine with his daughter, even though he knows they're there. So that's a great call. Very nice. Very good. Very cool. I'll ice cream them as they walk through this hallway. As Eden Hall Academy alumni, this picture is hysterical that they're looking at of a young Gordon Bombay. This picture is so freaking funny. Like, it's so funny.
Did they put Emilio Estevez in a wig for this picture, or did they get...
No, it's actually from the same photo shoot as what he used to use for his headshot.
Really?
This picture, he's showing his teeth, but his headshot was the same thing with a closed smile. Wow. This is a real old photo of him.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I actually did know that too. I actually knew that too. That picture is him, which is even crazier. That is his picture. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm myself.
Oh, and the paisley tie. Oh, man.
I give him credit for just having the nice little, like, I can't think of the word, but having it where he can make fun of himself.
Yeah.
He can totally make fun of himself. It's an awful photo. It's not a good picture at all. But it works for the point. And he gets to make fun of himself. But also, then summarize the entire first movie. That's
pretty much what happened.
He talks about his life and then gives the entire plot to the first movie.
As if Charlie doesn't know it.
No, like, what is the point of this speech? Because you have to think, the people in the audience watching this movie, especially when it came out, are fans of this franchise. What is this speech for?
Everybody got that? Good.
Charlie, not for us. Like, not for the people in the audience.
For the people in the back.
Like, Charlie's been gone for most of this movie, so let him explain his character and everything we need to know. Go.
Maybe it's with parents that are with the kids that did that is there for the movie, like my dad, who I don't even think he remembers the first movie. I think he remembers it, but it's maybe for them. Like, I don't know who this speech is for. It's just literally it's him just recapping the entire first movie.
Yet this speaks to, like I was saying before, about parts of this movie that feel like they were left on the cutting room floor. I feel like a lot of Bombay was cut from this movie. Like there's something, given how Bombay gets to exit this film very wistfully and cinematically, ooh, look at him walking away, ooh, wow. But, and this speech seems to tie into that, where he is now in the process of reflecting on this experience, but he's getting ready to say goodbye to it. But it feels like there's like a scene missing where that's a little more explicit. I mean, we had the weird intercut with the opening credits where he's talking about going to manage the Goodwill Games. But there's not a sense of closure. There's not a sense that I'm closing this chapter so much, because he's still very involved with the team and will become yet more involved later on in the movie.
Yes, he will. You're right. This is a really, it's weird, because you're right. I think there might be something missing, because he until like the funeral scene, he's not in this movie for almost a half hour. He's just gone. He's just completely not talked about. Oh, I wondered that almost 45 minutes. He's gone. He's in the,
featured prominently in the promo material, because we're all here for Emilio Estevez, but then he's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Huge swaths.
There he is. Yeah. Right there on the poster. Mm-hmm. Not the movie. For 70% of this movie, he's not in it. Like 75% of this movie, he's not there. And then he comes in to save the day, like twice. Like, it's the first time being the savior here. And then later he's gonna do it again. Like, it's so weird. And what's funny here, we're gonna end our minutes at him thanking Charlie for saving his life. What? Really? Is that what we're doing? We're thanking a teenage boy for saving my life. Okay, cool.
It's a lot to put on a kid.
Yeah, seriously. As if he doesn't have enough on his back as it is. He's dealing with the death of somebody who's close with, and now you're gonna throw at him, "You saved my life, Charlie. Thank you." Kid's having a rude week.
I'm sure Charlie is regretting not changing his shirt, because he is wearing the shirt he had on in bed. He just threw some jeans and flannel on before coming out with Coach Bombay.
Which is a very nerdy shirt, by the way.
I don't think he expected this sentimental speech when he left the house. I don't think he expected it.
Now, I was trying to parse it. The best I could see was just a peek into the Starbright, but I don't...
The Starbright Lab, the digital revolution direct from the minds of its leaders. It was some event in 95 about computer nerds.
Why did Charlie have that shirt?
I don't know. I was like, Charlie, is he a computer nerd? I don't think so.
Charlie Conway contains multitudes.
That's weird. That's really crazy. It doesn't sound like something up Charlie's alley, but maybe there's something we don't know about. You know, it's something we're missing, and he went to some computer thing and loved it and got into this. I don't know.
The actor wore it because he didn't care.
Oh, good call. Maybe it's something that Jackson wore. He wanted to have it on. He was hoping to promote something.
Costuming did have a t-shirt for Charlie for this scene, but you know what? That's fine. You don't change out of that. We'll just put you in makeup. That way you don't have to take the shirt off. That's okay. All right, let's go rolling, please. Quiet on the set.
Oh, man. So the second half of the speech will come up next week. And I'm just going to tell you who's on next week. So next week I'll have All-Star David Kincannon on next week to continue this speech and continue on with the film. Any other notes from either one of you men before we get to our last question of the show?
I'm just glad... I looked at this segment briefly and then I watched the film, and I was glad I got this segment because so much of the rest of the film, like some of their hockey games, the pranks are so cartoony and like sillier than I remember the earlier films being. Maybe they were the same. I don't know. But then this was like an actual thing happening and I liked it.
Something really important happened.
Yeah.
You know, some really good storytelling happening here. Mm-hmm. David, anything else you want to add on here?
Just that when they first come walking down this hallway, as any moodily lit shot of a school hallway will make me think of Carpe.
Yep. Yes. Well, and isn't, I believe the bedroom the other team sleeps in was in that movie.
No.
That's really? One of the trivia things on IMDb. Oh. And I was like, really?
I
mean, really?
I, I suppose if you're, you know, a boarding school, like, oh yeah, we'll make movie deals with anybody. Mm-hmm. Robin Williams, Mighty Ducks, sure, whatever.
Whatever.
It's all the same.
There you go. All right. We've been ending every episode with this question. So I'm curious how this is going to work with you guys. I'm curious how this is going to go. Craziest, funniest high school stories. We've been doing it this entire run. Ed will want to go first.
I completely forgot the thing I came up with. Oh, no.
You think. David, you got anything for him?
I was a huge nerd in high school. And so I don't have a huge store of crazy, funny stories. The only thing that I can relate, when I was about Charlie's age, so a freshman in high school, one day after school, or just a bunch of us bombing around, giving each other a hard time. And we decided, hey, you know what? Let's just start playing tag. And we're chasing each other through the school. I went to a high school that is built up on a hill, and which is a real feat when you go to school in the Midwest, but there it was. And as we're running around, we eventually start running outside the school, and the school was accessible from street level by these long stairways that went up from street level up to the school. And so as I'm being chased, I'm running towards one of these stairs, and I vault over the railing and come down with my full weight on my left leg.
Oh.
And I feel my knee snaps and then reset itself like a typewriter.
Wow.
And then I'm down on the ground swearing like a longshoreman. And it's just the worst pain that I've felt in all, you know, 14 years of my life. And then after a couple minutes, I was fine. Didn't feel anything, was able to walk home. Twice more, I shifted my weight later that summer, and my knee snapped and then reset itself until we finally began to think in my family, maybe something's wrong with David's knee. And when we went to go see the doctor, he had an MRI done. And when we came back, he put it up on the whiteboard and says, all right, well, now this is a normal knee. You see this cord here? That's your ACL. That keeps your knee from moving side to side. Here's your knee. You see this white amorphous blob down in the corner? That's what's left of your ACL. I spent the first month or so of my sophomore year in a leg brace and crutches because I had decided to do hurdles in the stairway outside the high school.
Oh my god, that's great. Wow, that's pretty great. It's not as bad as me starting my I think it was my freshman year where my dad accidentally locked up and jammed my finger in a door. And I had to start going to school year with my fingers bandaged up like this for like 2 weeks. in Pennsylvania. I'm in New Jersey. We're in Pennsylvania. I'm about to come home from vacation. And he slams my fingers in a door.
Well, it would have been very easy to be a man if you're worried then, because you'll always be able to say Scout's Honor.
Yeah.
Having all those fingers taped together.
Very true. Very, very true. All right. Over to Robert.
Now, I thought of one because of the vampire reference with Gordon earlier.
What was it?
I wrote a short story about vampires. This was about eighth grade, ninth grade. And a copy of it went around the school. Like, lots of people had read it somehow. My junior year, I go to a private school owned by a church. I go to work at their editorial department in their teen magazine. And my editor, the guy who's my boss, one day I walk in his office, that story's just sitting on his desk. This is like 3 years later.
Oh my god.
How is that here? How does that exist?
Oh my god.
It's the weirdest thing to see my story, because it had this weird like title thing I had made that was all artistic, saying blood withdrawal, really big letters on the front. I'm like, okay.
Oh,
hi.
That is such a junior high vampire like, and you hired story me. Title.
Oh, it is. Oh,
so
yeah.
Good.
I like that. That's fantastic.
I'm like, are you regretting hiring me now? I still don't know how he got it. I just like backed out of the room. I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, that's fantastic. I like that. That's good. This is why I'm loving these stories. Because I love these stories. I love these. All right, well, let's wrap things up here. Let me quickly if you're enjoying this show, enjoying everything other, like I always say, if you're coming over because you like the guest, but you don't know where to find the show, you can hear us on every single podcasting platform out there. And I say everything because we're literally everywhere now. Because I'm trying to find it, trying to find a platform for everybody, which is awesome. Also, it's not every single Friday. You can also hear me over at the Blake and Sal Show every single Friday at 9 a.m. Central Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, all over the podcast place. We have a lot of fun over there. We haven't missed a week since the pandemic started, which I am so very, very proud of. And before I get to Raw Split, I know those take a bit. David, do you have anything you need to plug on the podcast side?
You can, if you want to talk to me about my theory of Gordon Bombay being a vampire, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Father Mowry. That's FRMOWRY. And if you want to hear more of my blatherings about movies 1 minute at a time, you can find all of my podcast appearances on my website at FatherDavidMowry.com.
Perfect. Robert? I know this takes a bit, so go.
I have 4 shows. The Room Minute, which is looking at the modern classic The Room 1 minute at a time with guests. I have Cock and Bull Movie Talk, which is currently going through my favorite films 2 at a time. Annihilation Minute, which is looking at the science fiction film Annihilation with way too much research and scripted ahead of time, dense stuff. And 5 minute Arrival that I'm doing with my wife, where we look at Arrival in 5 minute chunks with the occasional guest. All right. And you can find links to that on any social media or lemmingdrops.com to find it easier.
Perfect. Oh, thank you, gentlemen. This was a lot of fun. This was awesome to do. I love doing this stuff, and I decided to have people on here that don't know the movie as well as I do coming on. Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm not gonna lie, I do enjoy that for a change. Because it's not like people are like, I watched this movie as a child, and I have this whole thing. I like having the perspective of, I just watched this movie. Here's what I think. So I appreciate that from both of you. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you both for coming on. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Next week, we'll be back again, like I said, with David and Cannon. And until then, I hope you all enjoyed the show and have a good day, everybody.
And when everyone says it can't be done, ducks fly together.